Just last week we celebrated Purim, and now we are in very great anticipation as we move forward toward the celebration of Chag HaPesach. And the Shulchan Aruch tells us in the beginning of Hilchos Pesach, Shalim Midorshim B'Hilchos Pesach Kodem LePesach Shloshim Yom. We have to prepare, we have to ready ourselves for 30 days before Pesach in order that we should be properly and adequately ready for the celebration of this Yom Tov. The source of that halacha of Shloshim Yom is learned from Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, when Pesach actually happened for the very first time, Moshe Rabbeinu on that occasion already told everybody the rules for Pesach Sheni, which was going to be a month later. And from there, the Gemara says we learn that 30 days before every Yom Tov, we have an obligation to make sure that we review, that we prepare, that we understand all of the halachos of that Yom Tov. But not only that, the Mishneh Berurah adds a comment here in the name of the Maharil. The Maharil was one of the leaders of Chachmei Ashkenaz, of Ashkenazic Jewry in Europe. And there, the Mishneh Berurah writes in the end of Siman Taf Lamed Beis, which is in Hilchos Pesach, he says, Kol Shloshim Yom Lefnei HaPesach, for 30 days leading up to Pesach, Yizoher Shelo Lasos Chametz Ba'ofen She'i'efshar Lahasiro Benakel. We should be careful for the 30 days leading up to Pesach that we don't leave chametz around in places where it won't be able to be comfortably, easily, and conveniently removed. That is part of the preparation that we should be doing for Pesach. So not only to learn the halachos, not only to make ourselves aware of everything we need to know, not only to make sure we buy matzah and we are adequately prepared, but he said part of that is just a very simple suggestion that we make sure in the next 30 days that we do whatever we can not to put chametz in our homes in certain places where it will be difficult for us to remove it. So Pesach in particular requires a tremendous amount of preparation. And in some ways it's disproportionate to all the other Yom Tovim throughout the year. As we know, we have to clean our homes. There's a lot of cooking that's involved. And in order to be able to cook, we have to kosher all the pots and pans. Often we have to buy new pots and pans, and that requires us to tovel them. We have to do a lot of shopping. So there's a lot that goes into the preparation for Pesach and to ready ourselves properly. But in truth, the Ramchal writes in the Mesilas Yesharim that hachana, that preparation is essential for all mitzvahs that we perform throughout the year, not only Pesach, but for everything that we do. And he frames it in the following context. The Ramchal, if you look here in number Aleph, the Ramchal writes in the Mesilas Yesharim, the beginning of Perek Yud Zayin. There he says, we strive in our lives to live a type of life that is enveloped with Kedusha V'Tahara, a life of sanctity, a life of dignity, a life of purity. And he explains, how do we get to such a level? How does a person become one who lives a life of sanctity, one who lives a life of Kedusha V'Tahara? Writes the Mesilas Yesharim, in Amaisim Hamadrichim El Ha'adam Lavo Lidei Midazu Shel HaTahara. What leads a person to lead that kind of life of purity, of divine inspiration, of holiness, is Hahazmana L'Divrei HaTorah V'HaMitzvos. The way to get to that is by preparing ourselves for all of the mitzvah experiences that we go through during the year. V'hainu, Shelo Yikanes B'Kiyom HaMitzvah B'Pesah Pis'om. That we should not enter into a mitzvah experience unprepared or extemporaneously. We shouldn't just walk into it without really understanding what it is that we're doing, impromptu. She'ein daitum yoshevas alav. If we don't have the proper mindset before we observe a mitzvah, v'yochol lehizbonen b'mashu hu oseh. If a person doesn't properly prepare, then they're unable to properly appreciate what it is that they're doing. Ela yazmin atzmo ledavar, writes the Ramchal, we should plan adequately, we should prepare whatever it is that's needed. V'yachin libo b'misun, and our hearts should be there together with us, ad she'ikanes b'hizbonenus, until we come into that mitzvah experience with an understanding, with an awareness, with a recognition and a knowledge why we're doing the mitzvah, what it is that we're expected to do, who it is that we're performing the mitzvah for, and what the parameters are for that given mitzvah. And therefore he says, if a person lives life with that kind of mindset, with hachana, as something that is so essential to every mitzvah experience that we have, to every mitzvah observance that we go through, then he says we can lead lives of Kedusha V'Tahara. In Parshas Yisro, we're told on the occasion of Maimon Har Sinai of Kabbalah Satorah. So the Torah writes there, Moshe Allah El HaElokim. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to the mountain. He goes up to approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then, Vayikra Elav Hashem min Ahar Lemar. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu called down to him. So the Arachayim HaKadosh asks, why is it? Sarach Ladas. Lama Ala Moshe Kodim Sheikr Lo Hashem. Why did it dawn upon Moshe Rabbeinu to go up to the mountain if God didn't call him? Where are you going? Why are you going? What is the purpose of this ascent up the mountain? And explains the Arachayim HaKadosh Pirish. Kishakadam huva Allah, when Moshe Rabbeinu took initiative, when he went up to the mountain, Tekef Karalo Hashem. Immediately after he did that, the reaction of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the response of the Ribono Shel Olam was that he came and he had a dialogue with him. V'yesh lecha ladas, and you need to know, writes the Arachayim, ki b'chinas HaKadusha lo takdim ela lemazmin osa umeir al hadavar. If you want sanctity, if you want holiness, if you want divinity in your life, it's only going to happen if you initiate, if you establish that kind of aura, if you do something to make it happen in your life. It's not going to happen by itself. And the way to do that is by acting like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Allah El Ha'alokim. He did all the preparation in advance, and then he took the initiative. He ascended up the mountain, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded, Vayikra Elav Hashem, Minahar Lemar. So this Sfas, one of the great Gedolim in Poland, he was the Ger Rebbe, and he passed away in the early 1900s. This Sfas Emes writes in his Sefer on Chumash, such a beautiful comment, where he wonders, why is it that Hachana, why is it that preparation for a mitzvah is so important? And obviously all the cleaning, all the cooking, all of the kashering, all the toveling, all the shopping, everything we do is part of this effort of Hachana, to prepare ourselves properly for the Yom Tov of Pesach. We're not doing it for ourselves. We do it for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We do it because this is what the Ribono Shel Olam wants us to do. So the Sfas Emes writes, why is it that Hachana is so important? And he suggests, Ein Hadavar Rachok, he says, it wouldn't be surprising to me. This is a radical idea that he suggests. But he says it's possible that you get more out of the Hachana for a mitzvah, out of the preparation, than you get for observing the mitzvah itself. How can that be? How is that possible? It's a very radical idea, and it needs an interpretation. But the Sfas Emes explains, there are two reasons why he believes that potentially there's more that can be taken from the hachana, from the preparatory stages of a mitzvah, than from the mitzvah observance itself. Reason number one, he says, is because the mitzvah observance is something that's fleeting. It's something that's very short-lived. You prepare for Sukkot, and you know that there are people, when they go to buy the Dalad Minim, they spend so much time checking, making sure, comparing. They like this one, they like that one. They don't like this one, they don't like the other one. Back and forth, they bring it to this store, the other store, they have it checked. That's what some people do, many people do. And how long is the mitzvah itself? 5 seconds. So all of that work, all of that preparation, and then you just pick up the Dalad Minim and you're finished. So, writes the Sfas Emes, the time and the effort and the energy and the expenditure that we put in sometimes to lead up to the mitzvah is often something that is far longer lasting than the mitzvah experience itself. And when I saw that comment, I was thinking, just to bring it down in simple terms, I was thinking about a wedding. You know, we prepare ourselves in so many different ways. A couple dates. That's the first preparation for a wedding. And they do everything to invest in the relationship. Then they finally get engaged. Once they get engaged, there's a million and one things to do. So we need to sit down and figure out a wedding date. We need to figure out where the wedding is going to be. So we call up all the different halls, call up all the different caterers, and we compare prices. We compare all the different amenities in each of the locations. Then we try to figure out how we're going to curate a guest list. And who's going to be invited? Who's not going to be invited? Who belongs at the simple? Who doesn't belong? Who am I friendly with? Who am I not? And the Kalis friends, and the Chassan's friends, the other side. And everyone has to make all the arrangements. And then we have to figure out the band and the flowers and the invitations and all the things that go into months and months of preparation. That's not to talk about all the clothing that has to be bought or rented or gemacht or whatever you're going to do. But there's so much, every last detail that goes into a wedding being pulled off and having an atmosphere that's so enjoyable for people to be at. And then you get to the evening itself and it's over. You get to the wedding experience that you spend so much time, so many sleepless nights arranging for, and it's a few hours and the whole thing's over. Not that that's a bad thing, but the Svasemis teaches us that for every major, critical, exciting experience in our lives, in order to have that magical or memorable feeling or aura that we want to create, it's imperative that we invest of ourselves beforehand to create it. It's not going to happen by itself. If a family does not make the preparations before a wedding happens, the wedding won't happen. The experience that we all know to be something that we take for granted won't be there. It doesn't happen by itself. And therefore, the Svasemis says that that's the same when we talk about our mitzvah experience. It's the hachana that makes us understand, that makes us appreciate what it is overall about our experience in doing that mitzvah that is so uplifting, that is so much more long-lasting than the mitzvah itself. It's very similar to an exciting event in our lives, like a wedding or some other simcha. Number two, the Svasemis writes, if you've ever seen, there are many people, certainly those who come from Chassidisha families or have Chassidisha minhagim, you'll be familiar that before many, many mitzvahs are observed, they say a paragraph of L'shem Yichud. Ever seen such a thing? So L'shem Yichud. So for many different mitzvahs, people say L'shem Yichud. And what is that? We say that we hope the reason why we're doing this mitzvah is because we're giving all of our attention to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and often in L'shem Yichud they say the names of Hashem, you know, we hope that this will connect the names of Hashem to us, to Him, to them. I don't know exactly what all of it means, but that's the point, writes the Ramchal. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks you to shake lulav and esrog, do you know exactly everything He had in mind? What am I supposed to be thinking when I shake the lulav and esrog? I don't exactly know. Somebody once went to Rav Chaim Soloveitchik in Europe, and he asked him, you know, I'm the Baal Tokeo, what should I be thinking when I go into shul and I'm about to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Rav Chaim Soloveitchik said, you should think that you should hold the shofar properly and make sure you get it right. That's what you should think. So obviously that's the baseline of what we have to think. People ask me all the time, what should I think when I daven? First of all, you have to think about the words that you're saying. Make sure you don't skip pages. Make sure you say every word and don't swallow them up. That's the first thing you need to think. That's baseline. Beyond that, do we have any idea, do we have any concept, a hasaga, of what the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah infused into these words? Do we understand the multiple levels of meaning that are behind every word in the Siddur? Do we understand the beyond our comprehension to every word in the pages of Chumash? There's no way to understand that. Look how many Svarim have been written on the Siddur and the Chumash and everything. And yet we do it. We daven, and we learn, and we do everything that a good Jew is supposed to do. Even though we understand that we're lacking in our ability to fully comprehend what it is that the mitzvah expects us to do. So that is what the Svasemis writes. We're never completely sure when we do a mitzvah how far our kavanah is supposed to go. We don't have the capacity to fully appreciate or understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be thinking or doing on that occasion of the mitzvah experience. However, the hachana, any preparation that we do, is good. Any preparation that we do is something that enhances our mitzvah. And the Ribono Shel Olam can't take that away from us. And therefore, writes the Svasemis, in his opinion, he believes that this is something that perhaps we have room to argue. The hachana for a mitzvah makes the mitzvah itself far more powerful than the mitzvah experience just in a bubble by itself, all alone. A number of years ago, I chanced upon a beautiful, really meaningful passage in the Haggadah Shel Pesach of Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. You know, if you go to the Svarim stores, you'll see that, like, there's a Haggadah Shel Pesach of everybody. You know, everybody has their own Haggadah Shel Pesach, and some family members have written up all that everybody has to say at the Seder, and it's very beautiful. So somebody once showed me the Haggadah Shel Pesach of Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. I happen to have not had enough time, so I really opened up to the first page. And on the first page, he was talking about preparing for Pesach. I didn't get much further than that, I confess. But Rav Mordechai Eliyahu wrote something that was so powerful to me. And he writes, what should a person think as they're preparing, as they're cleaning their homes for Pesach? It's something that's very tedious. It's something that's very difficult. It's something that takes a lot of energy and effort. What should I be thinking, other than the fact that this is difficult? Says Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, Tov v'roi l'chavin l'fnei hanakiyos. Before I engage in this mitzvah of preparing my home for Pesach, I should say the following. V'lo markach. Hareini minakeh es habayis u'mechavenes bazeh. I am cleaning, I am washing, I am dusting off my house. And the reason why I'm doing it is l'kayim mitzvas haseh min ha-Torah l'hashpis se'or v'chametz. I am not cleaning out my house because I like to do a spring cleaning. I am not cleaning out my house because I've just been pushing it off and I knew Pesach is coming, so now's a ripe old time to do everything that I've pushed off for the past year. I'm doing it because HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked me to make sure that there's no chametz in my home. And because of that, I have a right to ask you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, something in return. Va'ata hakel hagadol hagibar v'hanora. And you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ta'azreni lenakos es machshavosai. I ask you, Ribbono Shel Olam, to please purify, to purge my thoughts, my machshavos. The same way I'm going around and cleaning my home, I ask you to clean out my soul, to clean me out. Lenakos es masai, letaher es besi, to disinfect my house. Shelo yikanes bebayis hazeh hayetza harava hamachlokes. How often is it the case that we're so anxious, that we're so overwhelmed from all the preparation that we do, that we're on edge, we don't sleep as much as we otherwise would, we're not as happy and comfortable as we otherwise might be, and because of that, there's contention in the house. And sometimes there are arguments, and we're on edge about things. And he says, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to purify our homes from all of this negativity. May there be no machlokes in our home, shetashpia al habayis hazeh shefa shel tahara v'kedusha. Just as I am cleaning out my house, just as I am sterilizing my house for Pesach, I ask you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to also purify my home, to purify my family, to clean us out from all of this often negativity that sometimes comes into a home, especially in heightened sensitivity times like the weeks leading up to Pesach. And when I saw that, I just felt it was such a beautiful way to frame the whole experience of preparing ourselves for Pesach. So now let's get into a little bit of the halacha. Our modern day homes are far more complex than anything that Chazal ever imagined. What I mean by that is, people used to live in one bedroom homes. If you've ever been, not one bedroom, one room homes. If you've ever been to some of the old shchunot in Yerushalayim, Batei Varsha or Batei Ungarin, have you ever seen any of these locations? Like in deep into Mea Shearim or off of Machane Yehuda, there's like also one of these locations there. Like old, old Yerushalmi Yidden. I've been into those homes and it's really, many of them have one or two rooms in the whole house. And there are like partitions in the house made of sheets and blankets. And that's it. So when that was the case, they came to Erev Pesach and they walked around the one room in their house with a candle and they were able to search the entire house for chametz. First of all, they didn't have so much food in the first place. It's not like they had freezers and fridges that were stocked with foods and pantry cabinets. They had whatever they needed and that was it. They didn't run a Costco in their own house like we all have today. So it was very different. And they didn't have so many locations in the house to have things getting lost or getting stuck. There was one room. There was one room, so they were able to check. And today, we live in homes that I would guess Chazal would probably look at us and say, you must all be kings and queens and princes, and how can this be? These houses are palaces. So to us, it's a tremendous luxury, and we're very lucky to have all of this great bounty in our lives. But along with it comes appliances and furniture and all kinds of accessories and bookcases and shelves and closets and couches and wardrobes, and we have clothing and more clothing and more clothing and shoes and more shoes and all kinds of things that we have, and knapsacks and last year's knapsacks and next year's knapsacks and all the kids' clothing. Everything we have amounts up to this being a very complicated time of year. It's great for the rest of the year, but for Pesach, it becomes a very, very complicated thing to do. And it sometimes leads many people to a sense of great anxiety. They feel tremendous stress because of the enormous burden that's being placed on them to get themselves ready for Pesach. What's important to remember is the following. Everything in Yiddishkeit has to be with a balance. We live a life of Torah, which is one that we refer to as Derachei Darchei Noam. The Torah is supposed to be an enjoyable, invigorating life. It's not supposed to be one that adds stress or anxiety to our lives. It's not something that should make us feel tension or strained in any way. So yes, sometimes it's a little bit difficult to perform the mitzvos the way we are expected to. But we also need to remember that there is a major aspect of Pesach that sometimes is forgotten. We spend so much time and so many weeks getting ourselves ready that when it comes to the Yom Tov itself, we can't even enjoy. Let's remind ourselves, there's a mitzvah, v'samachta b'chagecha. Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos, there is a mitzvah that applies both to men as well as to women to enjoy the experience of Yom Tov. Let's not forget. Now, by the way, for all the women in the room, the Gemara does say, how does a woman enjoy Simchas Yom Tov? So the Gemara says that a husband has an obligation to buy his wife jewelry or clothing, because generally, that's what women enjoy. Not always. If a husband knows that his wife will appreciate something else, so then he should get something else. But if he knows that his wife will appreciate something that is in that category, so you can go to the bank. You can go to your husband and let him know, this is what the Gemara says is an obligation for v'samachta b'chagecha. Because we all have an obligation on our own level to enjoy the Yom Tov. The Gemara says children have an obligation of Simchas Yom Tov. We need to provide that for them. How do we provide a Simchas Yom Tov atmosphere for them? The Gemara says, Klayos ve'egozim. You buy them treats, you buy them candy, you buy them things that you know they will enjoy. So you don't want candy in your house, you don't want that. Okay, so you buy them a game. You buy something that will elevate their experience and make them happier. That's number one, what we are supposed to do. And sometimes the experience of preparing and being so stressed because of everything that goes into Yom Tov, you finally get there and you're just not interested in enjoying at all. Remind yourself of the fact, imagine the parents of the Chasan or Kala when they get to the wedding can't even bring themselves to appreciate the fact that we're finally here. You got to pull all the anxiety aside, all the preparation that we did, all the sleepless nights, and here we're here to celebrate this great opportunity of our child getting married. That's what we do when we come to the preparation, but finally it culminates in the Simchas Yom Tov itself. Let's remember, both men and women have an obligation to celebrate and to feel that sense of Simchas Yom Tov when the Yom Tov comes along. On top of that, let me also remind everybody that a woman shares in the obligation on Leil HaSeder. Although often throughout the year we say that something that is a time-bound mitzvah, women are not obligated. When it comes to Leil HaSeder, there's an assumption, for whatever reason, that we're not going to get into now, there's an assumption that women share in the obligation of matzah, maror, dalet kosos, sipur yitzias mitzrayim. A woman needs to be present at the Seder with everybody else. A woman needs to be there and fulfilling the mitzvahs halayla, and is expected to be as engaged as everybody else, if not more. The Akeras Abayis, the woman who runs the home, should be the one to really understand that she is going to set the tone for the house. And sometimes there are sedarim where the woman of the house is so exhausted from everything that's gone into the Yom Tov that they don't have an appetite to eat the matzah, they don't want to eat the maror, they're just falling asleep. And I can't blame anybody, but let's try to think about that in advance. As we prepare for the Yom Tov, let's remember, number one, we have a mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov that we all share collectively. Number two, let's remember that we have practical mitzvahs that we need to observe on Leil HaSeder, matzah, maror, dalet kosos, yitzias mitzrayim. And if we're not going to have the emotional energy or the attention span to be involved in all of these mitzvahs at the time that Pesach comes along, then potentially we have to think about that in the way that we prepare our homes. Now, I'm not here to ridicule or mock any of the minhagim. Yisrael minhagim are extremely important, and we should try to observe minhagim to the best of our ability. But we need to understand that when we exaggerate things, when we blow things out of proportion, when we overstate any mitzvah or any minhag, it comes at the expense of something else. So there are people who sit there on the floor and use toothbrushes to wipe out all the slats of their wood floors in the house. While that's an age-old, beautiful minhag that many of our grandparents probably did, let's think about the fact that sometimes, the Gemara says, Kala Mosif Goreya, sometimes if we go to an extreme with anything that we do, if we're not balanced, and we do too much of something, there's a price that we're going to have to pay. And that price is going to be, perhaps, if we've gone to the extreme in the preparation for Pesach, we will not be able to appreciate all that we prepare for. We will not be able to appreciate Leil HaSeder, and we will not have an enjoyable Yom Tov, which will stop us from Simchas Yom Tov. So we have to keep all of that in perspective. What is the bottom line halacha? Again, a lot of these are minhagim. I've heard, a woman called me last year or 2 years ago, I can't remember, no, couldn't have been last year. I think everybody was thinking about lots of other things last Pesach. Must have been the year before, that she was in the middle of scrubbing the wall, and whatever, a whole story. And I said, why are you scrubbing the walls? So she said, well, it's Pesach. I said, why would you scrub the walls? Like, do you think that there's chametz seared into your walls? There's no mitzvah to destroy your house or to take all the paint off because Pesach is coming. Now again, you want to clean your walls once a year, that's great, but don't blame it on Pesach. That's not the obligation that we have. And it's something that, again, the minhagim are beautiful, but just think about for yourself, what is the price you're going to pay for going to that kind of extreme, and is it worthwhile if that's the major price to pay, or perhaps not? That's just something to think about. So the Shulchan Aruch says, number one, a very important halacha, and that is learned from the Gemara itself in Maseches Pesachim, that if we have a place in our home that is a makom she'ein machnisim bo chametz, if you have a place in your house where chametz is not brought into, you don't have an obligation to clean that room. You don't have an obligation to search that room. There's no chiyuv bedika. There's no chiyuv to do anything. Now, if you have young children in the house, either your own or grandchildren or people, kids who run around your house for whatever other reason, this is probably something that is more difficult because kids somehow bring Cheerios everywhere. And you know, sometimes you open up drawers or you go into rooms that are the most improbable places to find such items, and yet you find them. And it's frustrating and it's upsetting. As many times as you tell the kids, keep all the food on the first floor, keep all the food in the kitchen, keep it in this room and that room, somehow, sometimes they don't always follow the rules. And you end up finding chametz all over your house. So if you live in a home like that, where you have little children who are running around with chametz in their hands, then you have to be careful. However, if you live in a home where that's not the set of circumstances, and you assume that there's a room upstairs somewhere that people have not gone into in the past year, and there's no chametz that you expect to be in such a room, there is no chiyuv bedika at all. That is what the Shulchan Aruch says. It's clear. There's no debate. There's no dispute about it. It's a very clear Gemara. A makom she'ein machnisim bo chametz, there's no obligation. Now, the complicated part of that is, how do we define? How do you clearly know which rooms in your house chametz is brought into and which not? So I would venture to say, in most people's laundry room, let's say, I don't know, you probably don't bring chametz into there. It depends where the laundry room is. Sometimes it's off the kitchen. I don't know. But it depends on the makeup of each of our homes to understand what is the nature of the people living in the house and where would they probably have brought chametz at some point during the year and where perhaps not. It's worth mentioning as well that the Mishnah Berurah writes very clearly, and the Shaarei Tshuva there, these are both on the page of the Shulchan Aruch itself. Mishnah Berurah writes, if I have small crumbs of chametz, and it's I guess, little particles of chametz, and they are metunav. So for example, if I have chametz on the floor, I don't know about you, but if I have, let's say, slats in a wooden floor, I happen not to have that in my house, but I remember when I lived in Washington Heights, so they had floors that weren't always perfectly finished. And you had slats in between the wood. And sometimes you did have crumbs that got stuck there. You know, you swept up after a Shabbos, and some of the crumbs from the challah did get stuck over there. The Mishnah Berurah writes that if you have small crumbs all around your house, and they are soiled, they're dirty, and I would never bend down to the floor and pick it up and eat it, which I assume is all of us. We would never do such a thing. Writes the Mishnah Berurah, I have no obligation to get rid of them. L'kuli alma ein tzarech leva'er. Mishnah Berurah writes, I have no obligation to get rid of those items, which I think should relieve us from a lot of anxiety and stress. Yes, there are places in our homes where sometimes chametz might get stuck in small particles and small morsels, small crumbs, and we don't have the ability to easily get to them. We don't have to, says the Mishnah Berurah. You don't have to. So is it a nice thing to vacuum your house that you're not going to have ants all over the place? Yes, it's a good idea. It has nothing to do with Pesach. It's nothing to do with Pesach, writes the Mishnah Berurah. We have no obligation. If it's something that were I to see it on the floor, I would never pick it up and eat it because it is something that I'm turned off from. It's something that's dirty or it's soiled from just being on the floor for so long. I would not have an obligation to go after that kind of chametz at all. There's a story told about Reb Shmuel Salant. Reb Shmuel Salant was the Ashkenazic chief rabbi in Yerushalayim. It's amazing. His story is amazing. He died, I think, at 95, 96 years old, something like that. When he was like in his 80s, he went blind, and he asked the council in Yerushalayim to try to find him an assistant chief rabbi that can come and hopefully take him over. So who came? Anybody know? They invited the Aderes. The Aderes was living in Panevish. He was the chief rabbi in Panevish for 19 years. And they brought the Aderes over, Panevish in Europe. They brought the Aderes over to Yerushalayim. This was his lifelong dream, to finally move to Yerushalayim. He was going to become the assistant chief rabbi. And the plan was, he was going to then become the chief rabbi himself of Yerushalayim. The Aderes happened to have later become the father-in-law of Rav Kook. So he became more famous because of Rav Kook, but he was very famous on his own as well, a great Talmud Chacham, a great tzaddik. So the Aderes comes to Yerushalayim, And it turns out that Rav Shmuel Salant outlived him. Rav Shmuel Salant lived till 90-something years old, and the Aderis passed away before him. So it didn't end up panning out. He was the assistant rabbi, but never actually got the job. And that was the Aderis. But Rav Shmuel Salant was a great, great tzaddik. It turned out that he had the position for almost 70 years, which is quite remarkable. He had the position of chief rabbi of Yerushalayim for almost 70 years. So one Chol HaMoed Pesach, there was a father of a young woman who came to talk to Rav Shmuel Salant, and he said, "I'm so upset." And Rav Shmuel Salant asked him why. He said, "Well, my daughter just got married about a month ago, and we were told that the boy was a really medaktik b'mitzvos, he was a really careful young man, and it turns out that we see he's not careful at all, and we're very frustrated, we're very upset." And Rav Shmuel Salant says, "Call the boy to my house, what's going on, what happens?" He says, "Well, there are chametz particles all over the house, and there's wheat all over the place, and we can't understand, how does a responsible boy allow this to go on Pesach?" So he wants his daughter to get divorced. That's what he came to the rabbi. He wants him to give a get. So Shmuel Salant said, "Call the boy to my house." He calls the boy to his house. He says, Shmuel Salant starts yelling at him. He says, "How dare you? How do you, you know, you're not careful about the chametz." It was all a setup. And Shmuel Salant says, "You know, you wear a strimal. You think you're that holy? Take that strimal off and throw it on the floor." So the boy didn't know what to do. He's like, this old man is sitting and yelling at him, telling him. So he takes the strimal, he throws it off of his head, he puts it on the floor, and wheat particles came flying out of the strimal. So what happened? What happened was that the minhag in Yerushalayim was for many, many years, there's a reason why, but when there was an ufruf, instead of throwing candy like we do today, they used to throw wheat. It was considered to be a siman yafe, that wheat, if you throw wheat on a chasen, it's, I don't know, some kind of good siman. So the chasen just got married 30 days before, he was wearing his strimal by the ufruf, and all these little particles of wheat, all these little particles of chametz got stuck in the strimal, and as he's walking around this house on Pesach, apparently they're flying out of the strimal, and his wife didn't realize that's where they were coming from. So she came to the conclusion that her husband obviously is not a medaktik b'mitzvahs because her husband is not careful. Look, there's chametz all over the house. And Shmuel Salant said, you know, from here we learn many things. Many, many things. We shouldn't be so judgmental and so quick to do anything. But on the other hand, Shmuel Salant said, we learn that in order to properly define what is a makom shemachnisim bo chametz, sometimes you have to think a little bit creatively. Who would have thought that I have to look in my strimal to make sure there's no chametz in there? But sometimes you have to think back to the experiences of the past year and really understand where could chametz have gotten and where perhaps not. Where do I have to check and where do I not? What's interesting is if you look in the psukim themselves, when they describe the experience of clearing our homes out from chametz, it's quite easy based on the way the Torah describes it. So the Torah says the following in Amr Dalit. Shivas yamim se'or lo yimatzi bebateichem, lo yiralecha chametz v'lo yiralecha se'or. The Torah says you're not allowed to have chametz in your house, and that's all we have an obligation to do. Make sure there's no chametz in the house. And from here the Gemara learns, shelcha yataro. It says, lo yiralecha se'or. That means you're not allowed to have your chametz in the house. And from there we learn, shelcha yataro. I'm not allowed to have my chametz in the house, but I'm allowed to have somebody else's chametz in my house. And that is why, really, all of us are pretty safe. Because we say Kol Chamira on Erev Pesach. Kol Chamira means any chametz that I have in my house, libato v'lehave hefker ka'afra de'ara. I now say that all chametz in my house is ownerless. Which means, should there be Cheerios somewhere under a bed or in a drawer or in a closet somewhere, I relinquish my ownership of that Cheerios. Even though it's in my house, and it's clearly there, and it belongs to me, but I now relinquish my ownership. Which means that based on the rule that the Torah describes here, I have no further responsibility. So this would be very easy. If we got up every year, Erev Pesach, and we just made an announcement, a declaration, I'm not cleaning my house this year because nothing in my house belongs to me. None of the chametz in my house belongs to me. Why do we trouble ourselves to search the house? What is this all about? What's the reason? So the Gemara says the reason why is because Chazal were concerned that we're so accustomed to eating chametz throughout the year. Every time you walk by the kitchen, you take something to eat, and we are very prone and inclined to doing that. And therefore Chazal said, what's going to happen? If I have chametz all over my house, and then it comes Pesach, and I officially made a declaration that all the chametz is not mine, but I'm so habituated to do this, that when I walk by the kitchen on Pesach, I'm going to do the same thing. And therefore the Gemara says, I'm probably going to make a mistake. If I don't get rid of the actual chametz in my house, I'm going to make a mistake and I will inadvertently eat that on Pesach, even though it does not belong to me anymore. So therefore the Gemara said that Chazal told us we have to remove, we have to get rid of, we have to discard all chametz that is in our possession, all chametz that's in our property, and we have to make sure that it is not ours. As we know, there is an age-old institution of mechiras chametz, and there's a lot to discuss when we try to understand and unpack what mechiras chametz is all about and why we do it. It almost seems like a legal fiction. Why are we allowed to do this? That we can just get around the system and circumvent the rule, and we could just sell everything to a non-Jew. It sounds like it's a little bit of a joke, but there's a very credible halachic reasoning why we allow for such a thing. But we need to understand that when we sell it to the chametz of the goy, it means the chametz is really not ours. It means it doesn't belong to us. My father always says, you should write on, you know, it doesn't make sense. Like some people keep all the chametz in their cabinet, and the same cabinet they keep all the Pesach ingredients. So this part of the cabinet is this, and this part is that. It's a little funny. So if the non-Jew would walk into my house and he would say, oh, you know, I'd like to claim my chametz, it all belongs to me. I would say, oh, this shelf, it belongs to you, and that shelf, oh no, this item in the fridge is yours and that one is not yours. So you have to designate, you have to set aside, it has to be real. It has to be a real mechira. Just remember one thing, by the way, when you go and sell the chametz to the rabbi, whoever you sell it to, you're not selling it to the rabbi. The rabbi doesn't want to buy your chametz from you. Then the rabbi violates Bal Yirel Bal Yimatzei on Pesach. He doesn't want to have all your chametz. He's not interested. You're giving the rabbi permission to be your shaliach, to be your proxy, to sell it to the non-Jew. So people sometimes mistakenly think, I'm selling all my chametz to the rabbi. No, I'm not. I'm giving him the right to sell the chametz on my behalf. Because if we had 1,000 people walking in here on Erev Pesach trying to do the mechiras chametz, it's a complicated process. You have to really know what you're doing. And I'm sure the non-Jew would go crazy dealing with all of us. So it's easier if the rabbi deals with everybody. And then the rabbi goes ahead and sells it on everyone's behalf. But you're not selling it to the rabbi. You're just making him the shliach on your behalf to do that. So it's important that for those who sell chametz, it's important that you designate places in your home where the chametz is going to be sold. So let's say in my house, this is what my parents always did in my house. Let's say we put like certain cabinets are closed off, and we tape them up, and we write on it or something. You put a sign on it. This is sold. This is not sold. This, you know, this is ours. This is not. Number one, it's good for us just to remember. If you walk around your kitchen and you have clear reminders of what's acceptable on Pesach and what's not, you won't make a mistake. Number two, it has to be real. I remember when I was in the White Shul, I think Rabbi Feiner used to make a point every year to take the non-Jew who bought the chametz into a few people's homes, and he would actually bring them in. He would bring him in on Pesach. He would say, oh, I'd like a drink. You know, he would go bring him to the cabinet of schnapps, and he would like take out whatever he wanted to show the person that, yes, the mechira is real. And you can't be upset when the non-Jew walks into your house and takes a $200 bottle of schnapps and starts drinking, some of it. That's what you did. You sold it to him. So my parents always had a neighbor who lived on their floor in the building. My father always used to sell. My father doesn't sell chametz gummer for whatever reason. Actually, a funny story. My father believes that you're allowed to sell chametz gummer. Rav Soloveitchik had a whole explanation to suggest why you're not allowed to sell chametz gummer, only when you have taruvas, only when you have something that's not absolute chametz. So when my sister got married, my brother-in-law was a big talmud of my father, and my sister was not. So, you know, she wasn't in the shir. So she just knew what we do in the house. So it came the first Pesach, and my sister started throwing out all the chametz gummer in the house before Pesach. And my brother was like, what are you doing? So she said, well, that's what my parents do. He's like, what are you talking about? And the shir of Shechter says you don't have to. So it's true. In the shir, my father said his opinion, which was that you don't have to, out of respect, out of deference to his own Rebbe. So in our house growing up, we always threw out chametz gummer. We never sold it. But my father thinks it's wrong. He doesn't think that's the right opinion. But out of respect to Rav Soloveitchik, that's what we always did. There are some who have that custom. But it's important that we always understand what it is that we're doing when we go ahead with the mechira. It's real. The chametz does not belong to us, and we can't be upset if a nachri would show up and want to take it. It's his. It's legitimately his. There are many rabbanim who feel that you can't just sell the chametz and then go to Honolulu for Pesach or wherever you're going. You have to sell the chametz and leave a key with someone that it can actually be accessible. You have to leave the key in a place where, should the non-Jew call me up and say, I'd like to go and claim my chametz, I can easily get it to him, and I can easily say, yes, it's all yours, and you have every right to take it. Now, if my house is going to be, you know, with 6 locks on it, and with an alarm system, and no way to get in, so how do you sell your chametz to the guy? How can it be? My father often tells the story how there were many people in Washington Heights, I think it was 30, 40 years ago, I don't remember exactly the details, but he says that, no, I don't not remember, I wasn't alive, but I don't remember how my father says over the details, but there were many people who went away for Pesach, and he says that they decided to just sell the whole house. This way they didn't have to do anything. They sold the whole house away. And then it turned out there was a major snowstorm Erev Pesach, and everybody was planning on going away. All their flights were canceled. They ended up having to stay home. And now they had homes that were not clean for Pesach, and they had chametz all over the place. And it became a very complicated issue. Not just where they're going to get food, but how they're going to live in their house. I can't live in the house when I have chametz all over the place, and someone's going to make a mistake and eat something. So keep that in mind. If you're going away for Pesach, it doesn't mean that you're absolved from the mitzvah of bedikas chametz. You have to do bedikah. You have to make sure things are in order. Sometimes people's plans get canceled, and sometimes you end up having to come home, and you have to be mindful of that as well. So today, we spend weeks in advance of the actual Yom Tov, cleaning our homes and going through everything. And the question is, when we do that, by the time Erev Pesach comes along, there's almost nothing left to do. So it comes to Bedikas Chametz night, and we know that we've cleaned out all the rooms. Let's remember, if in the last 30 days before Pesach, I swept the room, and I mopped the room, and I vacuumed the room, and I scrubbed all the walls, and I took my toothbrush, and I did the floors, and I did everything. Leil Bedikas Chametz, I can say, that is certainly a place, a makum she'ei machnisim el chametz. For the last 30 days, I know that this place is clean, I've locked the door, nobody's going in there with food anymore, everybody knows that this is a room that's off limits. So I don't have to check that room. The Aruch HaShulchan says, if that's the case, then I don't have to check any room in my house, because over the month that leads up to the Yom Tov of Pesach, I end up cleaning all the rooms in my house, I end up making sure that everything's out. So if that's the case, why should I have to do anything when it comes to Leil Bedikas Chametz? It's a very interesting question. Let's read it together in the Aruch HaShulchan number Hey, Veda. You should know, Shiyei Sholem, there are those who say, Lefim in Hagenu Shehanashim Menakem Achadar Mehatevos. When there are people who clean out all of their rooms, V'chol HaMekomosh Neshtamish Behem Chametz, Kama Yamim Kodem HaPesach, when we spend time before Pesach cleaning everything out, V'or La'abra Aser Kvar Lo Nimtso Shum Chametz, when it comes to Erev Pesach, there's nothing left in the house. The only things left are in our kitchen. We know what we still have left. Zulas Masha Menichem Lechol BaBoker, just we leave over something to eat for breakfast, something to eat for dinner that night, but otherwise everything's gone. The Hamish Shumarim, and you put them in a designated space in your kitchen. Imkain, if that's the case, Mahu Inin HaBedikah Shanim Bevarchim, why do we have to make a bracha at all on the Bedikah if, after all, there's no reason to be checking in the first place when everything is gone? That is the question that is asked by the Aruch HaShulchan, and he answers that, number one, sometimes, first of all, when you make the bracha on the bedikas chametz, you have in mind for the burning of the chametz that you're going to do the next day. And therefore, he says, it's still legitimate to make a bracha because we are all going to be engaged in the mitzvah of bir chametz on Erev Pesach. But outside of that, he says, every so often, you have people who set aside dinner or breakfast in their house for the next day, and then it gets lost. I know my father always says that you have to be careful when you put out the 10 pieces, you should write down where you're putting them. Sometimes you have kids running around the house putting the 10 pieces out, and then they get lost. So now, instead of doing bedikas chametz, you've put more chametz into the house, and you can't find it. So whenever we did it in our house, somebody in the family who was designated to set them aside always wrote down each room and each location where they put it, so that this way, if somebody wasn't successful in finding it, we were able to find it later on. But the Ramah says, because of this concern, everybody cleans out the house before Pesach. Everybody, in anticipation of Yom Tov, makes sure to do everything that can be done. The Ramah says this is why the minhag developed that we put out the 10 pieces, because we make a bracha, al bir chametz, we make a bracha that we're going to check our homes, and maybe there's nothing to check for. So the Ramah says, by putting out the 10 pieces, we know at least that we're checking for something. Otherwise, maybe the bracha is not even justified. So this is really where the minhag came from. This is really where it started. And this is what it comes down to when we talk about the mitzvah of bedikas chametz. Just some closing thoughts here. As we mentioned, the preparation for chametz, for Pesach, is something that is often looked at as extremely cumbersome. And it's something that makes people concerned. So the Dubna Magid has an amazing mashal where he says there was a wealthy businessman who had many, many people working for him, and one day he gets a message that there was a package for him at the port. So he sends one of his secretaries, he sends one of the people working in the office, and he says, can you go to the port? It's a few minutes away. I'd like you to pick up the package. He gives him all the information, the tracking information, and he says, I'll see you in a few minutes. After a couple of hours, this assistant of his comes back. He's completely drained. He's totally worn out. He's exhausted, and he's sweating. And the businessman says, he takes one quick look at him and he says, you got the wrong thing. The man says, are you kidding me? Look how hard I worked. It took me hours to get it from the port, and I carried it on my back, and I had to stop every few minutes. It was so exhausting. How do you know? You didn't even open it up. Why don't you open it up and see? He says, I don't even have to. I know you took the wrong thing. He says, how could it be? He says, well, I ordered a box of feathers. So obviously, if you're sweating so much, if you're that worn out, you're that exhausted, it means you picked up someone else's package because it shouldn't be so heavy. So the Tibna Magid said that, in his opinion, this is the way that he looked at many, many of the mitzvahs that we observe throughout the year. And the Tibna Magid writes so beautifully that our mitzvahs are supposed to be, as we mentioned, derachei darchei noam. They're supposed to be enjoyable. Living a life as a Torah observant Jew is supposed to be something that's a satisfying experience for us. It's not supposed to be painful. Like the pasuk says, "V'kovei Hashem yachalifu ko'ach." Those people who are involved in mitzvah opportunities, it adds vitality and vigor and strength to all that we do. It gives us more energy. It shouldn't wear us out. And our Kaddish Baruch Hu sometimes looks at us and he says, if you're that stressed out, if you have that much tension, if you have that much pressure and discomfort because you're observing the mitzvah, it means you got the wrong package. You're serving the wrong God. It's not what our Kaddish Baruch Hu wants of us. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to be happy people, leading happy lives, and understanding that life is not supposed to be filled with discomfort and stress and anxiety, especially over the mitzvos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects us to observe. So this is the beautiful message that the Tibna Magid gives over. But sometimes it's hard for us to think in such terms. Sometimes it's hard for us, especially when we see how cumbersome this job can be. So Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz writes so beautifully in Number Ches, what exactly is the perspective, what's the mindset we should have? B'hisbonin adam b'tachlis shifluso. Why should we have simcha when we do a mitzvah? Why should we be excited? Because when we understand how simple we are, tipa srucha kli male busha, umelech malachei hamlachem tziva lasos davar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu singled me out to do something. Think about it this way, he writes. Imagine the President of the United States, whether you like the President or you don't, you like this one, you like the other one, or you hate both, it's still the most important person in this country. Imagine one day the President calls you up and says, you know, I think you are the only one who I can trust to do this job. And I'd like to single you out to be the one to take care of something that's very important for the entire country. Now, whatever that is, writes Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, if I would get such a message, would I be nervous? Of course I would be nervous. But would I be as excited as can be? Would I feel so honored and blessed that I was the one who was singled out because there's something about me that's unique? Because there's something about me that can make a contribution? There's somebody that believes in me and thinks I can make a major difference? And he writes, how many obstacles would I be willing to overcome to do that? So I have to fly down to Washington. Oh, the tickets are expensive. It's not even going to register. I'm not even going to think about it. Why? Because that's what I have to do. And I'm excited to do it. And it doesn't bother me. So I have to pay for a ticket to Washington. I'll pay for a ticket to Washington. I have to take off a few days of work. I'll be happy to do that. It won't even be baba cheshbon. It won't even be part of the calculation. It's not even something I think about. Because the alternative is so much more exciting. Because what I've just been asked to do is so much an honor for me that I put it in context and I understand all these other things are irrelevant and I shouldn't even be thinking about them at all. Right, so Yonasan Eibeshitz, when we think about how lowly, how simple a human being is, and we understand the magnitude of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in comparison, and then we look at ourselves and we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu singled me out. The Ribbono Shel Olam believes that there's something I can do by shaking a lulav. I don't know exactly what it is that I'm bringing to the world, but if HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent me a letter and communicated with me and said, I think you can do something that will make a major contribution to the world, would I not be willing to overcome obstacles in any other aspect of my life for that? Says Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, that's what simcha of a mitzvah is all about. It's the understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu believes in me, and as simple and as fragile as I am, and as much as I have inconsistencies in my life and so many things that are lacking, the Ribbono Shel Olam still believes in me. And he points a finger at me and he says, I want you to eat matzah this Pesach. I want you to have simcha this Yom Tov. I want you to be the one involved in preparing for Pesach. When I think about it from that perspective, so I have some obstacles, it's going to cost me a little bit of money or a lot. It's going to be a couple of sleepless nights. It's going to be some difficult weeks ahead. Isn't that the greatest simcha in the world, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has charged me with doing this? That the Ribono Shel Olam entrusts me with his work? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu believes I can actually do it right? So let me make one final point before we end. And it's a comment that I saw in the English book that they published from Rav Pam. Rav Pam was one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Tara Vidas for many, many years, and he was such a giant of a person, but such a humble human being. And his Sefer on Chumash, there are three volumes in English. It's just beautiful to see what a sweet personality he was and how thoughtful a human being he was. So he talks about the Psukim in Parshas Tzav. Parshas Tzav is always right before Pesach. It's Shabbos HaGadol. And he says the Psukim describe the act of Trumas HaDeshen. There were many different avodas that had to be done in the Beis HaMikdash every day. They had to offer karbanos. One of the less pleasurable activities that needed to be done was Trumas HaDeshen, which means basically taking out the garbage. So there were ashes that piled up on the Mizbeach from the day before, and somebody had to come with a shovel and clean it off. That's not so exciting. It's not the most exciting job. But that was the first avodah to be done every day. Somebody had to go up onto the Mizbeach, take a shovel, clear it off, and get the Mizbeach ready for the next day. So the Mishnah writes in Maseches Yuma Daf Chaf Beis that for all the other services in the Beis HaMikdash, for the Shechita, who's going to offer the Karban, who's going to do everything, there was a lottery drawn every day to determine who had the right to do it. All the Kohanim are fighting. Everybody wants the opportunity to do service, to do it right. So how are we going to make a determination? So they had a lottery every day to decide. When it came to the Trumas HaDeshen, when it came to this activity of clearing off the Mizbeach, there was no lottery. People weren't clamoring for the job. And any Kohen who decided that he wanted to do it was able to go up onto the Mizbeach in the morning, and he did it. At some point, the Gemara says, the tide changed, and all of a sudden it became the cool thing to do. You know, it's like amazing how you watch how it works in society. Like, something that nobody was ever interested in doing, all of a sudden becomes really cool. And then everybody wants to do it. So that, the Gemara says the same thing. It used to be the in thing to do was to offer the karbanos and to do all the other activity. All of a sudden, the in thing to do became to take out the garbage. Interesting. So now all the Kohanim started fighting that they wanted the opportunity to go up into the Mizbeach and to clear it off. So the Gemara says that whoever was able to run up to the Mizbeach quickest, first, in the morning when the sun rose, whoever had the opportunity to get up faster is the one who had the job. Now the Mizbeach was a 50-60 foot incline, so it was a large Mizbeach. And the Gemara says, whichever Kohen was able to make it is the one who had the opportunity to do the mitzvah. That was the system. Then the Gemara says, on one occasion, there were two Kohanim who woke up early in the morning, and each of them was staring at the other, and you know, they saw that the other one wanted to do it, and he wanted to outdo his friend, and each one of them wanted to be the one. So they're both running up the Mizbeach, and 50 feet in the air, one of them sees that his friend's about to beat him to the punch, so he conveniently moves over toward his friend and mistakenly knocks into him, pushing him over off the Mizbeach, 50 feet down, falls down and breaks his legs. And the Gemara says, when that happened, when he pushed his colleague off the Mizbeach, mistakenly, in quotes, because he just wanted to get there first to be able to do the Trumas HaDeshen, the Gemara says, they said, this is a terrible system, and from now on we have to change it. We need to make a lottery even for this, because we see, now that it became so popular, we need to come up with a new system. So it's a very unfortunate story, and it's a tragic story. But Rav Pam says, there's a reason why that story comes up in Chumash right before Pesach. Because he says, when we translate that into people who are truly well-intentioned, when we translate it into people who are rushing to be involved in a divine and noble cause, for example, readying our homes for Pesach, getting ready to observe a mitzvah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he says we can term that as being on top of the Mizbeach. That's the pinnacle, that's where we belong, it's the apex. And yet he says we have to think about how many people get knocked off of the Mizbeach on our way. How many of our children get knocked off of the Mizbeach as we're rushing to try to get up to do what has to be done? How many of our children get yelled at? How many of our spouses are treated disrespectfully in both directions? Just happen to be talking to women. But how many people get hurt along the way? And how many phone calls do we not return as a result? And how many people are upset by our responses because we're just sleep deprived? And instead, we need to remember that our attitude as we go through the preparation for any yontif is something we always need to keep perspective in mind. Yes, it's true in the end we want to get to the top of the Mizbeach, and that's where we belong. And that's for every mitzvah experience. It's for every good experience in our lives. We always want to do it right. But to be mindful of the fact that we cannot push people off the Mizbeach as we go up. We cannot allow people to be the sacrifices when we're trying to get to that goal. And even if they're part of our nuclear family, even if they're part of that experience that we're trying to get to, it's important to always keep everything in perspective. I thought that was an amazing insight of Rav Tam. It speaks so much to who he was and to the kind of personality and leadership that he brought to the world. And that's why he is missed so much in our generation. Great leaders with such moderation, with such sensitivity and caring. But it's a perspective to think about as we come closer to this experience of preparing ourselves for Pesach. It should be something that, again, it's a little bit difficult. I'm sure it's stressful for many of us, but it should be something that ultimately we understand is bringing us to the top of the Mizbeach. And it's all about the attitude and the perspective that we have in ourselves as we go through all of these preparatory stages to bring ourselves to the greatest fulfillment of the mitzvah of Chag HaPesach. Amir Tz Hashem, next week.